always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
We are right off Skinker right now, right in front of Washington University property. And as you can see, there is a fence right here, and the fence lines all the way down Skinker. And in fact, it wraps around Forest Park Parkway. Now, as you mentioned, the university says the fence is up because of an upcoming commencement. But it also comes up just a day before another planned protest right across the street.
5:28 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp show. Susie Moore, deputy managing editor of redstate.com, is filling in for my partner Tim Jones today. As usual, every other Friday, we have Patrick Tui, senior fellow from the Show Me Institute, but we got something new for you today.
And now, a man who comes alive when there's bad public policy in Missouri, Patrick Tui.
Oh my God.
Well done, Joey.
That's why we have the best producer in St. Louis radio. Joey, that was very good. That's the first time that I even heard it. Patrick, what would be your new theme?
I'm flattered. Thank you.
You know, you've made it on News Talk STL when you get a regular theme. I just want you to know that.
Well, I'll tell you, I spent the commercial break trying to find another line from Passenger 57 that is worth quoting. And there is no other line from that movie that is worth repeating.
Oh, boy, I hear you. Patrick, let's talk about a article that you wrote for the Kansas City Star about not prosecuting nonviolent drug offenses in the cities and their impacts on the homicides. You know, the government, St. Louis City, I'm sure Kansas City does too, will try to tell us that the murder rates are down, crime is down, you know, everything is going great, when we know that a lot of these crimes are not being reported. And so that looks like crime is dwindling. Tell us more about your article, Patrick.
So a lot of people in Kansas City, and I'm sure St. Louis as well, will complain about a particular prosecution. Maybe they thought the sentence wasn't hard enough, or maybe they thought the plea deal let the person off too easily. And, you know, I don't envy the job of any prosecutor, and I don't want to stand over their shoulder and question the decisions they make in any particular case. But in Kansas City, for the past few years, our prosecutor, our county prosecutor, has said that she does not want to prosecute nonviolent drug offenses. And that's a real shame, because I think data from other cities show that not only do nonviolent drug offenders often go on to offend with worse crimes, but we've got a real drug overdose problem in Jackson County. And when we fail to interdict people who have drug problems, we're doing them a disservice. And so more than the prosecution in any individual case, I think the policy needs to change. I really like what Gabe Gore has said. You know, you need to prosecute every crime. That doesn't mean you lock everybody up, but you at least introduce diversion programs, drug courts. You do something to stand in the way of that offender and tell them, we don't accept this.
Patrick, what is your sense of the motivation behind that policy? Is it about just trying to make the best use of the available resources and focus on some of the more, you know, more serious violent crimes? Or is it a policy consideration that kind of is along the lines of the, you know, criminal justice reform and that sort of thing?
Well, I take Jean Peters Baker, our prosecutor, at her word. In 2001, she wrote a letter to the Kansas City police saying, exactly to your point, that this was an issue of focusing limited resources on violent crime. And so that's what she wants to do. And again, I respect that. You can't prosecute every crime all the time. But I think looking back at the 2.5 years since we've had that policy, and I don't know that it is actually an official policy, but in the 2.5 years since we've seen that letter, we haven't seen an improvement in the crime, the homicide, or the drug stats in Jackson County. So whatever its intention, I don't think it's bearing fruit. And again, it's not okay that people in a municipality or in a county just be told that there's a certain level of crime that they should accept, because I don't think that's true. And to Chris's point, people aren't reporting crime because they think, what's the point? And I think we've all been in that situation where you just say, well, what's the point? It's just going to be a hassle for me and nothing's going to come of it. And that's not acceptable either.
Speaking with Patrick Toohey, senior fellow at the Show Me Institute. Patrick, what I want to ask you is, this prosecutor, is she one a George Soros prosecutor? And what are the authorities saying when not prosecuting nonviolent drug offenses hasn't cut down the homicide rate? Do they have an excuse for that? Just not enough time has passed? What are they saying?
Well, I don't know that Jean Peters Baker is one of the Soros types. I think her politics might be in line, but again, her personal history, I take her at her word. I think that she wants to do the best. It's just not working in this case. Oftentimes, what we hear in Kansas City and Jackson County is really frustrating because they just want to blame guns. And I get that, but Jackson County has the same gun ownership rate as Johnson County does, right across the state line in Kansas. And they don't have a crime problem. And ultimately, I don't know that guns are more accessible today than they were 20 years ago. But again, even if they were, we have a homicide problem that is much, much worse. And blaming guns, I get, is tempting, but it doesn't get us towards a solution. I feel that people who want to talk about guns just aren't serious about fixing the problem. They're just looking to place blame somewhere else.
Patrick, you mentioned Gabe Gore, who's obviously the circuit attorney in St. Louis now, thankfully was brought in and replaced Kim Gardner once she left. And we don't hear a whole lot about him in the news, which I think is a good thing. But obviously he had his work cut out for him in terms of sort of turning things around from how the bad situation that we were in when he came in. But are we starting to see a difference in St. Louis in terms of, you know, more effective prosecution approach to things?
You know, Mr. Gore is climbing out of such a hole in St. Louis that I don't know I would hold him to account just yet. I think at the time he had, what, 250 murder cases that they had to climb out from under, and I'm sure he's handling it. And to your first point, part of my respect for prosecutors is that they aren't necessarily in the news, and they shouldn't be. When people criticize a particular case, it's really not the prosecutor's place to come out and defend themselves. It's just kind of the nature of the job. They can take criticism, but they've got to keep their head down. And so the difference, of course, is that Gore has been in St. Louis for just a short period of time, but Jean Peters Baker has been in Jackson County for years now, and so I think it is fair to hold her accountable for the policies that she has promulgated for the past 8 years, whereas Gabe Gore is again having to show up and fix somebody else's problems and really turn that office around.
We're speaking with Patrick Toohey, senior fellow at the Show Me Institute. Patrick, for the past several weeks, we've been talking to you about the stadiums there in Kansas City that they want to redo for the Royals and the Chiefs. There was a vote on that. Kansas City voters rejected that back in April. I want to ask you, does it surprise you that I saw a story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch yesterday that said that the St. Louis Cardinals, on the 20th anniversary coming up of Busch Stadium, says that Busch Stadium needs some renovations?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all, unfortunately. I do think that they are facing headwinds even before they've made a particular ask. And maybe it was a trial balloon. I think it was the Riverfront Times that broke the story, and the owners immediately kind of backpedaled. And look, that's a good thing I think the ask, the case they make in 2024 has to be much different than the arguments and cases they made 20 years ago. People are, I think they're more understanding of the issue. I think social media has made people more aware of all the research out there. They're able to organize more easily. And they are showing, and not just in Missouri, but around the country, a greater hesitance to shell money out. And maybe part of it is just the economy that we're in. They're not feeling so generous. Part of it, I'm sure, is that maybe the teams aren't performing so well, although the Chiefs out here have been doing well. So yes. I think it's a combination of things. But I am really glad that people left, right, and center are more skeptical of these asks. And I'm really glad that team owners have to be much more thoughtful before they kind of just do the same old, give us money.
Patrick, doesn't it also tie into kind of what we started out talking about, and that's the crime issue? Because I hear more and more people reluctant to drive down to a game. They're worried about parking. They're worried about walking to the stadium. They're worried about safety in downtown St. Louis, which is a crying shame. But that's the reality we find ourselves in 2024.
No, you're exactly right. And we heard the same issues in Kansas City, where they wanted to build a downtown park that was going to have no parking, really. And so the question was, people that are accustomed to going to the Truman Sports Complex, parking in that huge lot and tailgating, are now going to have to park on the street, walk a few minutes. And crime is a real issue in St. Louis and Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And it's something that these guys have to be worried about. And of course, the other thing is that games really aren't for grandpa to take the grandkids to anymore. A lot of families are priced out. Professional games are more of kind of a corporate a gift from corporations who hand them out to vendors or clients or whatnot, and the nature of it has changed, and so maybe with fewer people going to see games, they don't have a connection with the teams, and maybe are less likely to see a return in giving them tax money.
Patrick, besides the pride issue, how much of an impact would it be if the Royals and the Chiefs crossed over the state line and settled there in Kansas City? I mean, it's the same metropolitan area. Would it be a big deal besides just pride?
No, to be honest with you. So much of the economic research, it feels weird saying that, but I can't really figure out the great impact. Now, look, you've got people who will drive to the complex now, and maybe they stop at a restaurant on their way in, and those restaurants would lose out on those few nights a year. But as far as regionally, it wouldn't make a difference. I am probably just as far from Truman Sports Complex now in South Kansas City as I would be to going out to where they want to put the parks in Kansas. And again, I'm not spending any more money. I'm just changing my decision from movie or bowling to go see a game. It doesn't matter to me whether I spend the money in Kansas or Missouri. And, a lot of this research is they just look at economic activity before a stadium is put into a city or after a stadium leaves, and there's just no change. So, you say aside from pride, I understand that pride is a real part of it. But that's so tough to nail down as far as what is the actual value and how much are people willing to spend to feel good about themselves and their city. And I don't think it's very much.
Mm. Susie, I have a final question if you don't.
All right, go right ahead.
Patrick, I have my final question for you, my friend, is regarding your theme. Is there any suggestions that you'd like for that? Anything changes we can make for you?
No, I'm going to have to listen to that a few more times. I always say, as long as you guys spell my name right, I'm happy with however you say it.
What kind of name is that, by the way? I've always been curious.
That is Irish? It's very Irish. There are a whole bunch of different spellings, some with W,
yes,
some without the E. But it all, I think we all went through Ellis Island and they said, well, we're going to spell it however we want to.
Because I've known you a long time, but I've also known someone with a similar last name as yours, but they don't spell it the way that you do. They live in Pennsylvania. So you are right about that. I've seen your name spelled probably two or three different ways easily.
Yeah, it's a shame when I see people with the same name who just don't spell it right. It's heartbreaking.
Exactly. We've been speaking with Patrick Tui. He's the senior fellow at the Show Me Institute. And we enjoy talking with you, my friend. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Great. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks, Patrick.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I thought that was Irish, but I wasn't
sure. Yeah, the Patrick
sure.
kind of gives you a little bit of a
yeah.
hint.
Yeah. But seriously, that name is spelled like two or three different different ways. Susie, we're almost done here, and we can start the weekend. When we come back, we'll lighten it up a little bit, give you some news you may not have heard of or some news you can use. You are listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL.